Welcome to Habs Unfiltered. This independent podcast is featured on the Hockey Writers and iHeartRadio, bringing you honest and unfiltered entertainment and discussion on the Montreal Canadiens and hockey news. Your hosts, Matt Smith, Treg Wilson, and Blaine Putney, are proud to be one of your trusted sources. If you are talking about it, so are we.
Auto insurance can all seem the same until it comes time to use it. So don't get stuck paying more for less coverage. Switch to USAA Auto Insurance and you could start saving money in no time. Get a quote today. Restrictions apply.
Welcome to Habs Unfiltered. This independent podcast is featured on the Hockey Writers and iHeartRadio, bringing you honest and unfiltered entertainment and discussion on the Montreal Canadiens and hockey news. Your hosts, Matt Smith, Treg Wilson, and Blaine Putney, are proud to be one of your trusted sources. If you are talking about it, so are we. Welcome to Habs Unfiltered, episode 295. I'm your host, Blaine Putney, and I'm joined now by my co-host, Matt Smith.
Good evening.
For those watching on the live, we can hear your laughter, and we appreciate it. So we're coming to you post-game for the San Jose game. If anyone's still awake, I'm surprised. But we'll talk a little bit about new scouting hires, a little bit of the attendance of certain scouts, and the game itself. So without further ado, we'll just jump right in, and I'll bring up the new scouting hire. So the Canadiens hired Teddy Purcell, former NHL player, friend of Kent Hughes, apparently. So, Matt, what do you think?
I just think it's another guy that they're bringing in that they know that's going to be comfortable within the organization, that has ties to St. Louis, has ties to Lake Cavalier, et cetera. I think it's a move that's not going to hurt the organization, that's for sure. We've seen the Ranger, or the kind of the Ranger connection. We've seen the Tampa Bay connection. They're bringing in people that they trust. They're bringing in people that they know. I wouldn't be surprised if we hear more names come in that are much in a much similar situation. So far the hires that they've made have paid dividends, and they've provided their own spin on things with the Canadiens joining the organization. So it's a positive hire in my opinion.
Yeah. What caught my eye was in the interview with Arpad Bass. Pardon me. With the interview with Arpan Basu, they mentioned that Purcell had a specific set of skills that they wanted to bring into the organization to take advantage of his experience and how he views things. So power play style, a specific style of play, those little nuances that we're noticing are missing right now with the Canadiens.
Oh, very much so. Very much so.
So to have someone that can come in and have an eye for those special teams that they're looking for, those skill sets that would fit specific special team needs. And he's covering an area that the Canadiens have not really covered very well in the past. And that would be California and, well, you know, Southwestern United States.
Right.
So to have an extra set of eyes, an extra point of view that fits their overall scheme, I agree. I think having someone brought in like that, that's a good hire, and we'll see. Well, hopefully we'll see it pay dividends.
I hope so.
Now, staying on the scouts, I'm looking at the list of scouts that the Canadiens had at the game. Notably, there is a Chris Iserman, I'm guessing that's Steve Yzerman's, I don't know, cousin.
Sure.
He works for Detroit, so he must have a connection there.
I'm assuming so.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think so. But the majority of the scouts that were there were from the Ottawa Senators. And I can only imagine that it's not to scout the Canadiens.
I didn't think so. You would think that they're looking at San Jose. There's been a lot of talks out there that maybe they'd be welcome to bringing back a guy like Carlson if Carlson wanted to come back. Not sure how that relationship is now. Obviously, there was quite a bad breakup there, and Hoffman actually had something to do with it, and his wife or girlfriend at the time. We won't get into that, but with the way that Carlson's been playing, just absolutely, it's a kind of like a resurgence of his career, to be honest. A guy's making what, $11.5 million or something on the cap.
Yeah.
It's a guy that's won Norris trophies. He's put up 80 plus points. He's a very good player. And I think that Brent Burns moving on to the Carolina Hurricanes, it brought him back into the fold where he is the offense. He is the guy from the back end. And so far this season, Carlson is having a phenomenal season. I'm just bringing his stats up right now. 11 goals, 21 assists. And it's just, those are phenomenal numbers for a guy that everyone talked about, you know, this one of the worst contracts in the league and one of the talking about buyouts and talking about all this kind of stuff, you know, the next guy to go to the Arizona Coyotes, et cetera. They might've been there looking at him. They could have been looking at, there's multiple players, honestly, they could have been looking at, maybe Vlasic would be another one. If San Jose is trying to get rid of a contract, it's hard to say, but, with the Canadians right now, I don't think they were looking at anyone in the Canadians. I really don't.
No. The San Jose is going to be entering a rebuild as well. Yeah. So
there's players I hope they were looking at, but they probably weren't. And if they were looking at them, it was not the game to watch tonight.
Well, you'd think that would be the case. However, yeah, it doesn't matter. We'll get into that in a minute. But I want to stay on this this for a second. I mean, Ottawa is looking for a veteran defenseman, especially someone who can help with the offense.
Right.
Carlson is well known to the Senators and their fans. I think he would be a good fit there. What would Ottawa have to give back? I don't know, but not my monkey, not my circus. Yeah,
the price is definitely raised from what it was. It'd be high. For sure.
Yeah. But what I've noticed as well is, at the Canadiens' home games, especially, there's been a specific scout from Washington who has gone to just about every game for the last couple of weeks.
Right.
So I don't know if there's anything going on between the Capitals and the Canadiens, but I do find it interesting that they have someone almost dedicated to watch Habs games. There might be something there.
It could be. There could be. It's hard to say what would come back the other way or who specifically they're looking at. Washington's one of those teams that hasn't gone off to the greatest start. And they do have quite a few injuries right now, mainly one to Tom Wilson, who really is that he really isn't one of those X factor type players. He can finish, but he can throw the big hit. He can be the nasty guy if he needs to be. And he creates space for some of these other players, mainly a guy like Ovechkin, who's still having a great season. Don't get me wrong. But it could be that they're looking for a guy to bring into the top six or into the top nine to provide a little bit of depth scoring to that team while they wait for other guys to get healthy.
Yeah. And there's also New Jersey and Dallas, who were also there and have been sending scouts to Habs games now,
right,
while on the road and at home.
Right. And it's well known right now that
about 2 weeks,
Dallas is looking for a top six forward. Now they're looking for someone that can go on that line. I believe it's with Sega and Mason Marchment. I believe they're looking for a third piece there.
Jeez, a right-handed guy who can play in the top six. And wow. What are the odds the Canadians have any of those guys? Josh Anderson.
Does Hoffman shoot right? Does Hoffman shoot right? No, no, he doesn't. He shoots left. Does Dadnov
shoot him out of the?
Does Dadnov shoot right? No, he shoots left. God damn it! What about Drouin?
Shoot him out the house.
Drouin's a lefty as well.
Yeah. So there is some smoke out there about right. a deal that's going to be coming up. At the very least, what this shows is, yes, Hughes is very active on the phones. And he could just be setting tables, having talks with certain teams who have shown interest, and they're just completing their notes so that maybe sometime between New Year's Eve and the trade deadline, right. the Canadians will be able to shoot 4, 5, 6 guys out.
Right. Well, the way I'm looking at it right now, the team's still playing and they're playing competitive hockey other than tonight. Yes. I've thrown that in there a couple times. You don't want to start the sale too soon.
No.
You still want to show your fan base. You still want to show the team itself that you're ready to, that you're not ready yet to fold and to say, okay, this isn't our year. Right. Yes, they're out of the playoff spot right now. They're unlikely to make the playoffs. Not time yet to just kind of sit down and say, okay, well, we're just going to prepare for the draft in Nashville in the summer.
Well, with the surplus of forwards that they have and defense now as well,
yeah.
who are all NHL capable, moving a couple of guys out up front, a guy or two out from the blue line, you're really not going to hamper the team's level of play that much.
No, but I wouldn't be looking right now at this point. I wouldn't say let's move out of Josh Anderson right yet. Let's not move out of Sean Monahan right yet. When their value, you probably, if when you look to move a guy like this, well, I'll throw Monahan in there because he's an expiring contract. You look at a guy like Monahan, there's probably going to be a bidding war for him at the deadline. You get a guy that can play up and down the lineup. He's going to play in a top nine role for whatever team brings him in. He's a steady face-off winner, which is something that's very coveted within the league, especially in the playoffs. He's a good puck possession guy. He can play on a power play, etc. I'd hold on to him as long as you can and get that one team that says, okay, we need to have this guy. We'll dangle this as well to make the deal. That you saw how it worked with Sherrod.
Yeah, exactly.
And right now,
he's not in a rush to make a deal.
Yeah. And right now, we're hoping every day that the Florida Panthers lose because that first round pick is unprotected. And as we record right now, Calgary is currently up 3-0 in the second period on the Panthers. So let's hope that continues.
Even if the Panthers finish where they're at now, which is around 17th, 18th overall,
two top 20 picks.
That's pretty. Yeah.
Yeah.
A top 20 pick for Ben Sherratt plus a prospect.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Not too bad at all.
Not bad. Yeah. But just
wonder if you can take Monahan though, flip him for another pick, and then you're getting another future first round pick.
Well, and that's the thing. Hughes was paid a first round pick in 24, 25, 26, 27.
Yeah, read the matrix.
Conditional 3,000. I don't know. But he was given a first round pick just to take on the contract. And now Monahan is actually outplaying Kadri, who they signed and moved Monahan out to fit him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's early, but nonetheless, it shows that Monahan is returning to a top six form, a quality player. And I think you're right. He is most likely going to be the biggest draw on the trade market.
Yeah.
Colorado needs centers. They need to replace Kadri. Monahan would be an affordable option. It would just cost them a first.
Right.
Or an NHL ready top prospect, but they're picked clean there.
Right. It'll be interesting to see who else moves. That's on an expiring contract. If they maybe entertain moving Drouin. If a move can be made, if he gets healthy, he's skating a little bit now. Still, he's still a few weeks out from returning, of course, but would there be anything there? Would there be a return? Would there be, you know, a draft pick even? Like, who knows? Like, not to not let the guy go for nothing. And then you look at that trade tree and you got Sergachev and how well he's really blossomed in Tampa. And yes, Drouin's had his time in Montreal and he's shown flashes, but at the end of the day, it's going to be one of those trades that goes down that it was not the right move for the Canadiens on the long term.
One of the few trades that Bergevin has done where it just didn't pan out, but that's more to do with Drouin's health concerns, all the injuries he's had.
Yeah. And then there's the mental health thing as well, and him taking time away from the game and everything. And
yeah, there's that. But as for giving him a chance somewhere else, it's probably going to cost the team 50% eating his cap.
Yeah,
just to get something, you know, hey, give us a third round pick. We'll eat 50%. Take them.
Right.
So that's the hope.
On an expiring contract, though, it's something that might happen.
Yeah. Yeah. You never know. But back to Monahan, just the sheer fact that someone paid you a first just to take his deal.
Yeah.
And then flip him for another first. This is a massive home run for Kent Hughes.
Yeah. And I'm looking forward to the day that when we pretty much know the trade's going to happen. Just when is it going to happen?
Yeah. I know a lot of people want to keep Monahan, you know, re-sign him, but I think we covered this in the last episode. Somebody who like Monahan, who's a top six player, he's going to want to get paid as a top six. He's going to want term.
Yeah.
He's already 28 years old with a history of injuries.
Yeah.
You're better off just to cash in, you know, take that winning lottery ticket, cash it in. Right. Yeah. It's not the grand prize, but you just got yourself a free pool.
Yeah.
So, and anyway, moving on from that to the San Jose versus Canadiens game. Habs lost 4-0. They got beaten by a very a team that really shouldn't have won that game. The Sharks should not have won that game.
I agree, and it's much like the Chicago game that they should have won the game in regulation. Never should have went to a shootout. Yes, it made it more exciting, and there was a lot more, camera work and everything because Doc scored the shootout winner. But I agree. Like, it's a game that they definitely should have won. It's not like they had a bona fide number one goalie playing for them in Kakinen. Their shot selection was all over the place. Their power play again continued to struggle. Eric Engels tweeted it out. They had 6 power plays in the game with a 2-man advantage. And in all of that, on the power play, 1 high danger chance. And that's just unacceptable. We saw at the start of the third period when they had that 2-man advantage, was roughly 55 seconds or so. It was cycle the puck, cycle the puck, cycle the puck. And everybody knew it was going to go. It was the same thing in overtime against Chicago. Everyone knew the puck was going to go to Caulfield, and that's what they were looking for. And the defensemen just had to stand there, and it was just a story of the game. They were the San Jose players were constantly getting in the front of Canadian shooters. Blocks tonight, 28-9 for San Jose.
Yeah,
right. And it's not like San Jose Sharks are a top 5 team in the league, but they did the small they did the small things correct. And they won the game for it. And it really shows a dead power play just kills all your momentum. Because we saw a couple minutes or a minute or so after that 5-on-3 was over, all of a sudden it's 2-0. All of a sudden it's 3-0. And then the game is just out of reach.
Didn't help the Canadiens power play to look good when they're up against one of the best penalty killing units in the league.
Right.
San Jose was more than happy to let them stay to the outside. If they tried to move the puck into the centers, tried to go to the slot, make passes across the ice, they were there. They would, they had that boxed out. And the Canadians had no answer to that because, as you said, their power play is just not good enough right now.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a systemic thing, if they're too predictable, if it's a personnel choice.
They have two moves.
Yeah.
And I tweeted this out. It's either or wait for Suzuki to do his skate into the zone from the blue line thing and take that shot. We know that it works and it's worked quite a few times, but it's so it's predictable. And so is getting the shot to Caulfield a la Shea Weber type spot. It's very predictable. It's you're not Alexander Ovechkin yet. You can't just stand there and be like, I can score from anywhere. I don't need to move my feet. Right. And
he, you know, one of the greatest goal scorers in the history of the league.
Absolutely. Right. But too pedestrian, no urgency. It's if they want it to work, they've got to use that skill. Like we saw the top line for the Canadians in Doc Suzuki, Caulfield. We know they can move the puck. We know that they can put it in a cycle. Why can't you do it when there's three guys on the ice or four guys on the ice that are more or less staying stationary, that are waiting for you to make the move?
Yeah.
But you can do it on the rush.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, exactly. And I liken it to Suzuki's shootout attempts. He's got one move that he can put a variety of spins on.
Right.
So five, six different looks to the one simple approach. Okay. If they can do something like that with the power play, where, it's the same approach every single time, but... Yeah. They have five or six different looks once they're in that zone and they're set up.
Like I go back to the Vancouver Canucks and they have a set play and it works. It's that bang, bang, bang play. It's give or take a pass from the blue line to behind the net to the front of the net. And it's a click, click, boom. And when it works, it pays dividends, but you've got a couple guys in the back end that can make a good, pass, or you've got a guy in Doc that can play back there that can make a good first pass, right? They have the personnel, they've got the skill to do this. Yes, they're not one of these, $11 million plus players per player a line type team. But they've got the skill there to be able to pull it off and at least be able to put up better numbers than what they have been. And again, another 0-for-6 tonight. It's not acceptable.
I agree. They need to find a new approach or something different just to give it a try because this isn't working. Now, overall, I think people would be quite surprised to see after losing 4-0 that the Canadians actually had possession of that game for the vast majority of it. They hold a 73.61% Corsi 4 percentage, which means they controlled three quarters of that game. The puck was on their stick.
Yeah.
Scoring chances for it. The percentage was almost 70%. But considering the fact that the Canadians completely outshot San Jose and had that massive possession advantage, the high danger chances for was only 6 to 7 against.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, it's not like they made it really difficult for Kaapo Kähkönen tonight, and congrats to him.
No.
He picked up his first shutout with his new team. But it's not like they made it difficult on him. And there was some things that I noticed where it's, they had sustained pressure in the zone multiple times during the game, but it was shot selection or let's make an extra pass or let's cycle the puck a hell of a whole bunch until we lose possession or let's shoot it into a group of bodies. You know, there was no finish, obviously. All right. There was no finish. And it's just, we saw towards the end of the game, a little bit of line juggling. Slafkovský moved up a little for a little bit with Anderson and Monahan, which is something I've brought up a couple times. We'll see how things go. I think that I don't even know who they're playing on their next game, to be honest.
Calgary. Sure.
It's Calgary. They're going west.
Oh, that's right. They're going on the road. Yeah. They're doing their western road trip.
Yeah.
But anyway, for this game here, you brought up Slafkovský, and I find that he actually had a very good game.
He did. Now,
he only played 11:42, but that's still like a full minute and a half more than he normally gets.
Right.
His Corsi 4 percentage, his personal one, was 80.95%. He had an expected goals 4 percentage of 79.81. He had 13 scoring chances for and only one against, and he had three of the Canadian's six high danger chances himself,
yeah.
None against. Yeah. So he, in my view, he had a great game. He created a ton of offense. He showed missed the net a couple of times. Yeah. He showed some speed. He had a couple of good chances where he just missed the net, and he made some amazing passes. Unfortunately, he was playing on the fourth line at the time, and Pezzetta couldn't finish.
Yeah. Or Evans.
Right. Now, I think Slafkovský in this, and he won four faceoffs out of the four he took. So winning those, he's won all of those faceoffs, and he played a very solid game. And I think he's proven that he should be given a little bit more.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, he played on a line with Monahan and Anderson, and he looked good.
Yeah.
So why not give him a full period or game in that role?
It's going to be interesting when it seems that Hoffman's getting closer than Drouin. But yeah. When he comes into the lineup, you're likely looking that Pezzetta's going to be the guy that's going to be the odd man out. But then what happens? Right?
Exactly. Who moved,
right? What's that line going to look like? You're going to move Armia down. You're going to move Dadonov down. You're going to put Hoffman there. Like it's hard to say.
Well, I think Armia should be moved down because ironically he has no finish.
It's true though. It's true. He hasn't played up. He hasn't played up to expectations. No. That's for sure. Neither's Evans.
I think Armia would be a better fit on that fourth line with Evans. At this point,
Two big guys are going to win more battles.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now I know that they want Hoffman rolling again once he comes back, but Slafkovský deserves a little bit more. I understand the development process that they're putting him under. It makes sense. I'm not disagreeing with it, but I think that he should be given the opportunity to take a larger bite here and there.
Yeah.
And see what happens just so he can, because he needs to get used to that NHL speed, that pace of game. And while playing on the fourth line is great, you're still learning NHL pace.
Yeah.
That's not the top six pace. That pace is another notch above.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if like he can get some time in there.
Yeah. I would like to see that as well, but it's kind of the quality of players he's playing with on that line as well. It's not like it's I'm not gonna say traditional bottom six role that he's playing. It's not like he's playing on the fourth line, and it's not like he's playing on a high energy fourth line. Right? He's playing, we get our chances every now and then, and we're out there to kill men at fourth line.
Yeah.
Right.
Try and find some energy fourth line.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not like a fourth line where they put it out right after a penalty so they can get people going, or right after a power play to keep momentum, because power play kills all momentum. We saw it.
Yeah.
But it's not even that kind of a role that he's being given. It's just, we'll send you out, play some mop up time with a couple of guys who, I like Evans and Pezzetta. I think they're really good for what they do.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're at the level of Slafkovský at this point.
No. And we've seen the creativity of Slafkovský, and sometimes he's holding the puck a little bit too long and he ends up either losing the puck or he makes an ill-advised pass or a shot, because in his eyes, I can make this pass to this guy. He should be able to finish it off. And we've seen time and time again, it doesn't work out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And my final view of the game tonight was Matheson. He led the team in ice time. He played all situations. And for the most part, I thought he did okay. But you could tell he's still a bit rusty. He still isn't a complete, you know, he's being put on a top pair against top players, and he's not quite to that level. He's still the Canadiens' best defenseman at this point, but he's not a number one.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when Jeff Petrie was in Montreal.
Yeah. And he same had to type be of the player. Number, he had to be the number one.
Had to be the number one. Sometimes he stepped up and he was better than that.
Yeah.
But a lot of times he just couldn't meet that expectation.
Right.
And right now I think that's where Matheson is kind of in. Not that he can't. It's that he hasn't played enough games. He missed a long time, and it's still catching up to him. So once he can get going,
right,
seriously going, probably after this road trip, I think would be enough games under his belt in a season to say, this is what he is.
Yeah. And, you know, playing out against Calgary, who's kind of a hit or miss team so far this year. Hopefully they're going to go against Jack Campbell, and it's the Jack Campbell that's letting in a beach ball tonight. And then hopefully they get a struggling Canucks team, right? Not the ones that have
that's won the hope.
Two or three games in a row, right?
Now, I this game wasn't as entertaining as others, and I don't mind that the Canadiens lose the game as long as they got some kind of lesson out of it.
Yeah.
They need to learn from it. This is a game they should have won, but they couldn't get anything going. And if they can see where they failed, then hopefully they can fix that. But right now, I think it's more the fact that they don't have a cycle game.
No.
It's all off the rush. If they can't score on the rush, there's nothing sustained. They need to be able to play a heavier cycle game to augment that rush chance.
Yeah, but we've seen that they can set up in the zone. It just, they have no finish when they start cycling the puck around. It is
exactly. because the
players don't know what to do with it.
Well, the players who can do the cycle are not the players who can finish.
Yeah.
I mean, Monahan does play that style from time to time. Slafkovský can, Anderson can, but Anderson's not finishing. Monahan, he's good, but he's not able to carry an entire line.
Right.
He needs people to feed off of. And Slafkovsky's still a rookie who's only playing 11 minutes a game.
Yeah.
So, and then there's Armia, who's a possession monster who wins almost every board battle, who can dangle in a phone book, in a phone booth, but somehow he's just not producing.
He's just been snake bitten all year. He's hit posts and he's, you know, missed open nets. And he, as you said, he's just not producing. And it's those depth guys that you want us, that you every now and then you need to see their name come up on the score sheet. It just hasn't happened.
No. And I think another aspect as to why the Canadiens are not being as successful, goaltending has been well above average most of this season so far.
Yeah.
And when Jake Allen plays a good but not great game, they get exposed.
His last two games have not been the best for him.
No, he's not been able to make those big spectacular saves. I don't really fault him too much on the first two goals, but that third goal,
the
on the breakaway,
yeah,
through the five hole,
he had it too.
That's one Yeah, that's one that he probably should have had. And had he been playing up to his full, you know, the way he was playing earlier in the season, that wouldn't have never have gone in.
Right. I'll say the first one you can kind of contribute to the defenseman not being there to say like, hey, let's not let this guy take an extra couple whacks at our goalie's pad and pop a puck in. And then the second one was just a good, it was just a good tip.
Beautiful tip. Yeah.
Right. So,
So I'm not going to eat his lunch over the first two goals. The third should have had. Okay. Sure. Then there's the empty net. But even if Allen was able to take care of that, that breakaway goal, take that off the board, take that first one off where, you know, he got hacked at a little bit, that still leaves a goal. And San Jose still wins the game because the Canadians could not score.
Yeah. And it's not like they didn't put in an effort in the third period. I think they put up 14 shots or something in the third. And 14-10 in the third period. So.
And that period is when they had the most high danger chances for.
Yeah. And it, they
had three.
It's just, it wasn't their night. And until they do something to fix that atrocious power play and to be able to take advantage of a man advantage for once and not it kill their 5-on-5 momentum, the Canadians are going to continue to struggle and they're going to continue being one of those, say, you know, they'll be an outside the playoff team until they can start using the skill that they have to contribute points on the power play.
And honestly, this season, I don't care if they're outside. I want them outside.
And a lot of people are the same way. It's just, it's how you lose the game. And you want to see positive growth. So yeah, they might lose a game 3-2, but maybe they went 1-for-3 on the power play. Or something like that. Their penalty kill is already going towards a very positive trend, especially compared to last season. If their power play can start kind of creeping up and being a weapon like it used to be years ago, where it was like, we don't want to take a penalty against this team, it would be something great. And right now they've got a few players that can do it. But again, way too predictable.
Yeah, I agree. It's just a good power play can mask a lot of warts in a game. So had the power play been able to produce, especially in that 5-on-3, they score on that 5-on-3, it's a completely different game. Because right after that 5-on-3 was completed, they went back and scored and made it 2-0. Had the Canadians scored, it's a tie game, that changes the whole approach. So while a power play doesn't need to be lethal 100% of the time, it should at least
be a little bit of a deterrent.
Provide you a goal or two.
Because right now,
a goal or two here and there.
Because right now, a team is comfortable taking a penalty in the final 5 minutes against the Canadians, or fuck, even in overtime, because they know that the Canadians probably aren't going to do anything.
Pretty much.
Right. So hopefully something they can work on.
Hopefully. Now, I think that pretty much does it for this episode. Is there any final thought? Any final thoughts? At all?
Sorry, you cut out and I was waiting for you to, I was waiting for you to finish what you were saying. I got no final thoughts. We're creeping in our 300th show, so something to look forward to. The schedule for the World Juniors and who's playing where is out now. We know what the groups are. We've known that for a while. There's going to be some hockey in Quispam Sis and Buctush and Moncton, and it's going to be good for the province and something to look forward to. I know you're going to be able to see some games in Halifax. Yeah, something to look forward to. Looking forward to Boxing Day.
Yeah, as am I. I'm looking forward to watching Owen Beck and Riley Kidney and Joshua Roy all donning the Team Canada jersey while I'm sitting there in the press box watching that game. Can't wait.
I'm looking forward to it.
It's going to be a great holiday season.
Absolutely.
best Christmas in a couple of years for sure.
Yeah.
So for me, I'd just like to thank everyone for tuning in, watching us live, listening to the show, following us from Anchor over to Megaphone. If anyone's still having issues, I know we've received a couple of DMs from our listeners mentioning that they couldn't find us anymore on Anchor, not the new episodes. While our old episodes are still available on Anchor, we are now on Megaphone and everything is released on there. You can find all our past library on Megaphone as well, but any new episodes are now there on Megaphone by Spotify. So check us out there. Keep sending in your comments, your jokes, your DMs, emails. We really love the interaction with you guys. Keep in mind, there's a ton of other great podcasts you can check out, like Locked On Canadians, Happy Hour, all of them. They're great shows. Check them out. But, you know, keep listening to us too.
Let's listen to us first.
But yeah, daddy needs a pair of shoes here. So keep us in mind with your podcasts. We get some fun shows every now and then. So we want to thank you for listening. And remember, if you're talking about it, so are we.
The Podcast Super Friends is a monthly meeting of five podcast producers.
Hi, I'm Catherine O'Brien from Branch Out Programs in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
I'm John Gay from Jagged Detroit Podcasts.
I'm Matt Kundel from the Sound Off Podcast Network.
I'm David Yes from Pod 617, the Boston Podcast Network.
And I'm Johnny Peterson from Straight Up Podcasts.
Together, they form the Podcast Super Friends, an alliance of podcast masterminds sharing best practices, insights, and discussions to help make you a better podcaster. Follow or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or at soundoff.network.
I'm Matt Kundel, host of the Sound Off Podcast, the show about podcast and broadcast. Since 2016, we've been speaking with amazing people who have populated your ears for decades. Legendary broadcasters, research wizards, talent experts, podcasters, voice talent. Almost 400 stories, all for free. Subscribe or follow the Sound Off Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at soundoffpodcast.com.